You're listening to Joey Ritter Live at joeyritter.com, also on Twitter at Joey Ritter. All right, joeyritter.com, on Twitter at Joey Ritter. Very excited about my guest today. I got Greg Attenito, lead singer of the Bouncing Souls and co-lead singer of the duo powerhouse Playdate. Now, Greg, first of all, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. Now, I find it very odd that I have you on my show and the Bouncing Souls aren't exactly the focal point of the discussion.
Right.
And, you know, what I mean by that is Playdate. I'm very excited about this because, you know, my wife and I were blessed with a baby girl recently. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking around for stuff to play her, and, you know, I'm on the punk rock sites, and then I see, you know, ads for your new album and stuff, so I check it out, and it's just great, great stuff to, like, you know, play the baby. So talk to me, how did Playdate get started, how'd you come up with the idea, and all that stuff?
Okay, well, it was a few turns of events. We created the book first. Shanti wrote the story and wasn't intentional to write a children's book to begin with. She just was writing. We're creative. We're always writing songs. We have random ideas about all kinds of stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. So she started writing that story, and it ended up being like, well, this might be a cool children's story. She finished it, and then we were looking for someone to illustrate it. And then she kind of like, when I was whining once while I was on tour, I was like, I would like to be doing some other stuff. I'm kind of like hurry up and waiting all the time.
Right.
And I just want to get my hands in other stuff. But when you're on tour, you can't really do a whole lot of other things as much as you can. You can more so now because of technology, but like 7 years ago, you couldn't do as much. So she suggested maybe you should try illustrating the book, the story, which I did. And after about 5 years, we finished and we published the book and went for a walk. And around the time that I was doing the drawings, we were invited by our nephew's teacher, who was in second grade, to come to the class and do some music.
Okay.
We had no kids' songs, but we ended up, Shanti brought her guitar and I just went in and we started like writing a song with the kids and we just had a good time. And that, I think that was the first moment that the idea occurred to us that it might be fun.
So this is about what, when, like what year?
That was probably 2003 or four.
Okay.
That happened, and then I started drawing the pictures for the book. I pretty much just did it while I was on tour with the Bouncing Souls. I had no timeline. I just did it whenever I had time, so it took about 5 years to do the 36 drawings.
Right.
And so we put out the book, and then we went and read the book at schools and different little shows that we did when we put the book out, and then we'd bring our guitars and play a couple of kids' songs. And after almost every show, the teachers or whoever over was like, do you have a CD? Those songs are great. So we just were like, no, we don't have a CD, but we should.
Right.
So that, from then on, like way back, that was 2007. So even before that, we were like, you know, we could do a kid's record. We have fun songs. All we have to do is just do it. And it took last year, we were friends with Mike Park, who runs Asian Man Records, and got in touch with us and said, okay, I'm starting an actual kid's label with my label. I really want you guys to do a record. And we said, perfect. We need this excuse. Now we have to focus, and we're going to make the time, and we're going to do it. And that's pretty much what happened. And we had a few more songs that we worked on, finished them. We went and recorded them, the drums and the bass and the guitar with Pete Steinkoff from the Bouncing Souls in Asbury Park. Michael played drums. And then we finished it here at our home in Idaho with, you know, just a lot of the other little things and vocals and stuff. So that's the long story.
Right. No, that's a great story, actually. Now, I imagine, you know, kids' songs, they got to be catchy, quirky, happy, all those things. You know, compared to the type of music you've been writing the last 20 years, mm-hmm. what's like something different, you know, going into writing kids' songs?
Well, I think the spirit of having kind of a sing-along vibe is the same. It's exactly the same. You want it to be catchy. You want it to people, you just want someone to want to sing along with it.
Uh-huh.
I think the difference is it's a little bit less personal, in a sense that it's like a lot of times the Bouncing Soul songs were very were about the writer, like, and I, the Bouncing Souls has always been a collaborative writing experience. So sometimes one person will come in with like their own life experience, and then we'll write it as a group. So it'll be a primary writer, and then sometimes we'll write it as a group.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still, it's kind of, a lot of times it's about you. And that can be kind of burdensome sometimes. So I think this is the big thing that's different about it that's fun, because it's not about you at all. You're writing about the alphabet, or you're writing about like things that it feels a little bit more liberating in that sense. And that part of it has been the enjoyable part of writing. That's a little different.
Okay. Now, I think it's awesome that you work with your wife on this, obviously. Mm-hmm. I can't even get my wife to do an interview on my show. And, you know, you're touring around, you know, writing albums with your wife. But do you ever get into, like, musical arguments, that the same kind of arguments you would have with band members?
Yeah, sure. It's like, it's the same thing. I think it's taken a lot of years. We've been together for a long time now, and we're getting better at it. But we, you know, had some rough moments for sure, you know. But you get better at recognizing when something's, you know, if you get in an argument, almost in any situation, you have to figure out why it has escalated to this point. You know, like, there's something personal going on, and you need to stop at that moment before it gets worse, because it's not about the song anymore. It's not about what you're trying to get done. If you're getting upset, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I think, because the creative process, if you're following a thread of intuitive creativity, that's just going to be simple. There's not going to be any question in it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't figure that out, you have to stop and move on to something else before you let it get ugly. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I what I'm saying is, like, does it ever bleed over into, you know, you're talking about doing the dishes or something, and it's like, no, just like when you suggested that harmony in the third verse, no, we're not doing that.
Well, in the sense that, like, when we record for 10 hours in a day, then you try to, like, okay, you try to turn it off, but you can't, and we're still together, and we want to, like, just relax. In that sense, that's kind of challenging, you know?
Right.
What's always there is that we both really want to do it, and we really love it, and that usually prevails through any kind of trouble, because we really want to do it, and we love it.
Mm-hmm. Now, did Shanti sing the female part in Wish You Well?
No, she didn't. That was before I met Shanti.
All right, I tried to Google for that answer, and I gave up after, like, three clicks, so...
Yeah, it was a girl named Kara.
Okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
A friend.
So, all right. So, generally, you know, with Playdate shows, how are the shows? Do you, you know, advertise to parents and children, or do you have, like, you know, old Bouncing Souls fans that, you know, want you to play Say Anything?
Well, we've not done many. We've done the Pooza Fest in Montreal. They had a kid's stage. It was great. And, you know, there was probably 100 or so people there, families and their kids, and we had a blast. And just a week or so ago, we did our record release show in Asbury Park at the Asbury Lanes, and then we also did a couple of smaller shows. Like, we did a couple of schools, and then we did a party at our friend's house. Actually, our friends Melissa and Lou from Sick of It All, who you might know.
Yep.
They have a 2-year-old girl. So we had a party. They had a party at their house, and it was a blast. But I guess, what was your question was, what's
question
the audience?
Just, you know,
yeah, we
in terms
try
of
to
the actual shows, are Bouncing Souls fans coming? You know,
yeah. Well, at the Asbury Lanes, definitely. I mean, that's kind of like the home territory, and so there was a lot of Bouncing Souls in New Jersey for sure. And it's automatic. Like, you're aware of the Bouncing Souls. You like the Bouncing Souls. It's almost like, as soon as you've had a child, it's almost like, those people that are Bouncing Souls fans that have children, they automatically get it. If you don't have kids, it's like they don't even notice that I did a children's book.
Yeah. I'll be completely honest. I mean,
it's funny.
If yeah, exactly. If I didn't have my daughter 5 months ago and I was doing this interview a year ago, it would be 100% about the Bouncing Souls. But I'm all about Playdate now because I want to, you know, play some new music for my daughter.
Right. So it's kind of funny, and it's fine. And there's plenty of peripheral people who are discovering it now because the record, and we just started it. You know, it's like we just started pumping the internet with the record release, and people are starting to learn about it. And it's moving away a little bit from Bouncing Souls fans, but it's great because there's like a core of people that are instantly were like, yeah, we love it. I love to play this for my kids. I love the Bouncing Souls. So there's like a whole lot going on there for sure.
Well, there's traces, I think, of Bouncing Souls music, you know, in some of the songs that you guys have. And, you know, it did take me 30 or 40 seconds to kind of get used to the fact that it was your voice over that type of music. But then it's like, well, that's awesome, you know? Like, I don't know if you're aware of your competition, but, you know, I don't really know much about the Wiggles. But from what I do know of them, they kind of creep me out. And I would much rather play, you know, your record than, you know, the Wiggles.
Yeah. And that's very much the idea, too. Once we committed to doing the kids' record, our purpose was we want to make music songs that are cool. You know, we want adults to enjoy it with their kids. And The Muppet Show is a good example for me as a kid growing up. The Muppet Show was on every Sunday night at like 7:30 or something. And we would all sit down and watch it. And my parents totally enjoyed it because the sense of humor, the songs in The Muppet Show were amazing. They're written by Paul Williams, and like the cleverness and the musical stuff going on in those songs are great.
Mm-hmm.
And the sense of humor, it was like they weren't playing to this kid mentality.
Absolutely.
There was a really clever sense of humor, and you know, you'd watch the show and my dad would laugh at something and I wouldn't get it, but you'd be like, it was like upping your whole, you know, your mentality as a child.
Right.
Instead of dumbing you down with like really stupid stuff that there's plenty of out there, you know.
Right. Well, that really probably answered my next question, but I was going to mention you have a video on YouTube, Dance Like a Monster, kind of like a modern day Monster Mash type song.
Mm-hmm.
My wife had to tap out of that real early because the guy at the beginning with the carrot top hair kind of freaked her out. But, you know, I was going to ask, what were some of your favorite children's songs that, you know, stay with you all this time?
I think, again, like, when I was a kid, there wasn't really much kids-oriented stuff. All there was in my world was Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers, and The Muppet Show. Like, those are the primary ones. And then there was a couple other shows, like Zoom and stuff, which is, like, late 70s. Stuff, Electric Company, these were shows on PBS that I watched. But I never had any records or kids' cassettes or kids'. I can't even think of any. I listened to like my mom's like Elton John records and those kind of things. And Kiss. I had a little like one of those tiny little record players, and me and my sister used to listen to the Kiss records on it. So
that's cool. I mean, it was the same way with me. I mean, I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for my parents' record collection. You know?
Yeah. So those are the main inspirations, I think. You know, and Mr. Rogers, like him or not, he did an amazing... the way he did it, I learned more about it once we started doing kids stuff. Like, he single-handedly did that show, like, pretty much by himself. Like, in the very beginning, he had no money, so he would create all the sets, and like he had a piano player who played live. So he'd walk in, the piano player was right on the side playing. So every day when he walked in, he was singing that, you know? When you watch them now, and he's just singing it different every day.
Right.
Which is so cool when you think about what we're seeing now and how everything is so, you know, it's just... you hear the same 1 minute of music that's over and over and over and over, you know?
Right.
So to me as a musician and a recording artist, I love that about that. And, you know, we want to bring that kind of spirit to it, like a real human, you know, natural, organic kind of music, because it really helped us as, you know, kids. And as me and Shanti too. And Shanti has a whole other experience growing up too, but she, her parents were musicians and they were always singing and playing music around the house. Yeah. And that's how she got into music.
Well, you guys, I mean, you guys have the power now in 2012. I mean, you could do your own little, you know, Google Hangout, Ustream type kids show on the internet, play your songs and get kids to enter, you know, type what songs they want to hear or, you know.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, I've done a couple of little live acoustic shows via Ustream, and it's a good thing that we might tackle that as far as a playdate thing one of these days, like in the next year or something. That could be really fun.
Cool. Well, Playdate, again, you can check them out at facebook.com/iloveplaydate. Is that the best place for people to check you out, or am I missing
something? Facebook, I Love Playdate.
All right, I'm going to shift gears a little to the Bouncing Souls.
Okay.
My favorite album is Hopeless Romantic. It came out the year I graduated high school. I had, you know, a shore house with my friends. That CD was just on repeat, nonstop. Cool. Tons of great memories, you know. Went to see you guys at the Troc when you came around. Can you share anything, a memory, a favorite song, a studio experience, what you like best about the album, anything Hopeless Romantic related?
Okay, just off the top of my head, a funny story that when we were recording Hopeless Romantic, we were recording in Sausalito, in California, and we were in the same studio that Fleetwood Mac Rumors was recorded, or one of the studios. They probably recorded in like a bunch of different studios, but that was one of their claims to fame, and we were kind of stoked because Rumors, I think, was one of the most top-selling records of all time. Plus, we loved it. Great songs. So we were just talking about it when we were there. So one day, we're just hanging around outside, and this guy walks up, and he looks real serious, kind of serious, and we're just standing there, and he says, "Hi, how you doing? My name's blah, 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 and I'm here. I'm here to visit the studio because Fleetwood Mac Rumors was recorded here." And we're like, "Oh, cool, man. That's cool. We dig it, you know." And he said, "But I just found out that I won't be able to go inside unless you guys allow me because it's your recording session." And he was like on this homage, like he came from Oklahoma or something.
Okay.
Like really far away. And so we were like, "Yeah, man, come on in." So we like gave him the full tour, and like the guy was just like in awe. Like he's just looking at the walls, and he's just like, "Wow!" It was so awesome to just witness him be so completely in awe of just being in the same room.
Yeah,
that just popped off the top of my head.
That's exactly what I was looking for. I just wanted anything Hopeless Romantic related. But that you actually have a similar story. In your DVD, which is the greatest band DVD created, and, you know, I'm not just saying that because I have you here on the show. What I mean by that is, you know, they say a baby's born every 15 seconds, whatever it is, and I think it's probably the same statistic for bands forming. A lot of bands form. There's a lot of bands out there. And I think that when bands form, you know, that should be the DVD that they watch. And
that's cool.
After they're done watching the DVD, the question is, are you willing to go through what this band went through? And if the answer is no, get out, you're done. And the answer is yes, you can move on. Okay? And one of the things that was so cool about that DVD, and I'm not trying to date you here, but, you know, I started playing in bands and stuff in the mid to late 90s, so the internet was in existence already.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys, you know, you had to build up your fan base really before the internet took off. So, you know, you had your kitchen with the million phone numbers that you guys would call. You had your mailing cards and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of compare that to today with Twitter and Facebook. Do you think that maybe it is a better personal touch back then? Or do you think kids are just as excited to get tweets and messages from Facebook?
It's tough to say because there's pros and cons for both.
Yep.
So it's really tough to say what's better or worse. You can kind of go back and forth about little things you like better about now or little things that you like about then. But after all the little details, you want to break it down to the nitty gritty. It's so much easier to just communicate with everybody now.
Right.
And it just overrides. I mean, think about like just going to a gig. We didn't have maps. We didn't have a phone. You had to pull over to call somebody. Like, you think about it, like just that one example, like, oh, we have to call the promoter because we're going to be late. You got to pull over and call the promoter and or whatever. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Now, so in the end, that instant communication wins over.
I hear you.
And you can create, like I said, like now we have the technology. We have the power to use it and keep it, keep the human touch in everything we do if we want. You know, it's, I think that's the challenge of it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree with that for sure. But since you actually did it, I just wanted to get your perspective on it.
Yeah.
Now, one thing you guys did a couple of years ago, and you released, you know, a song a month. I think it was an MP3 per month that eventually was the Ghost on the Boardwalk CD. But that was kind of a new thing, I remember. A lot of bands weren't doing things like that. You know, I'm not really asking how many MP3s you sold, but was that strategy a success, do you think?
The best part of it, the most successful part of it, was because we were going from Epitaph, and then we were going to go on Chunkside, and we didn't have a marketing budget at all. So we were going to have to do it completely DIY in the sense of what we had at our disposal. So the most successful part of it was by releasing a song on the first of the month throughout the year. We got press on each song that came out. So we were getting attention throughout the entire year, whereas opposed to a lot of times now you see somebody puts out a record, within 2 weeks everybody's forgotten about it.
Yeah.
Whereas it used to be when we first, you know, in the early 90s, you go into a record store, there'd be like three or four posters on the wall, like new releases coming out in 2 weeks. And like that poster would be there for 2 months, one a month before and a month after that release. So it was like very, all the new releases were very, they were in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And that disappeared with the internet, I think, for everybody on varying degrees, you know, depending on how big of a band you are and so on and so forth. But now it has become like, I'm going to focus on the things that I like on the internet, and I'm going to pay attention to the things I care about, but I'm not so much cruising into a record store and looking at the wall and seeing more random stuff that I might not know about as much. So in that sense, that was the biggest success of it. We had attention to each song throughout the entire year, free publicity in a sense, for a whole year instead of just for that one second everything comes out. We didn't sell a ton, and we learned that a lot of our fans wanted the CD. So as that year went along, people were like, cool, you got new songs. When's the CD coming out? And we're like, okay, yeah, well, we're releasing it digitally. They're like, they didn't even hear that. They were just like, cool, when's the CD coming out?
Right. Like, yeah.
So after having those conversations a little bit, we're like, okay, yeah, the idea of not releasing a CD is just not even something to consider. It's just a matter of when we're going to do this. Because we did consider not releasing a CD at the very beginning. It was an option, and then it just turned into not an option.
I hear you. So, in a sense, then it was a success.
Yeah.
So, Bouncing Souls, you guys really stood, you know, for the East Coast. You know, yeah, you had songs about East Coast FU, but at the time, you know, you guys were blowing up. Most of the popular bands were from California and the West Coast, but you guys had that, you know, monopoly on Philly and Jersey and New York, I think. What do you think about it? What do you think about East Coast crowds? You know, because you've played everywhere. What do East Coast crowds have that maybe, you know, West Coast and Midwest crowds don't have?
Well, I have a biased opinion. I mean, I can only give you the opinion of a Bouncing Souls audience because, you know, and in general, it's just the most heartfelt bunch of people. And it just goes a little bit deeper when we're in New Jersey and New York in the area, you know, because it's just, we have a longer history we have more friends, we have our family, and that just, it's just more solid there. And I think you throw in the factor of like the Bouncing Souls are from New Jersey. I am too. I love that extra little bit about them because of that, even though we get the same support and love all around the world. But it's just that little extra special bit of sauce in New Jersey, you know?
Right. And I want to make sure I mention you got your Home for the Holidays annual thing that you do December 26th through the 30th?
4 days, yep. Okay. 4 nights at the Stone Pony in Asbury Park starting December 26th.
Yep. And it's cool because you have a different lineup each night, you know, so it's something different every night. And I know you're from Jersey, but, you know, I grew up going to the Trocadero, seeing you guys, and that's an extension of your home right there, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Trocs, it's just the same. It's just part of the same picture to me, and we all grew up going to shows there, too. So it was, like, one of those places that was really special. And just so you know, because probably since you had gone to the Trocs for so long and you love the Troc, this is an interesting detail you might care about. The owners of the Troc, we're like probably one of their favorite bands ever that's ever played there. And they always said that. They always loved us. They always gave us a good deal and so on and so forth. But recently, something really cool happened. I forget, was it the last time we played there? Of all the shows they ever had there for however many years, the owners never invited the rest of their family to come see a show.
Okay. Ever.
And these are people that like never go to shows, you know, like, but they invited their extended family to come see us at the Troc.
That's awesome.
Kind of fun.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. All right, so I got a question that's my only out there question.
Okay.
But, if 2012 Greg could time travel back to early 90s Greg with the ponytail,
yes,
what would you say to him?
I would say, chill your brain out, dude. It's fucking going a million miles a second. Just figure out how to, like, just reel that in a little bit, buddy. Take it easy.
All right. No, that's good. You guys, you know, you guys have a lot of 80s references. You've done some 80s tribute albums. Who was your favorite 80s movie villain?
Ooh. What's popping in my brain? First thing I thought of, but I mean, what's that guy? The Lost Boys?
Yeah, sure.
But I don't really love that guy so much as a villain. But that's what popped into my brain. So I'm just going to have to go with that.
Well, I'll jump in on this one, too. I'm going to go with William Zabka, who is Johnny from The Karate Kid. And he was...
Oh, yeah. He's great.
You know, he was the jerk in every single 80s movie.
You just love to hate him.
Yeah. So I have a couple Italian-related questions for you.
Okay.
I'm half Italian, but I act like I'm 100% Italian.
Okay.
Gravy or sauce?
It's been sauce. It was always sauce in my house. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But that's sauce.
Yeah. It really doesn't matter. I mean, it's both.
Yep.
Do you guys do the seven fish dinner?
No, I don't even know what that is.
Oh, I don't know if it's specific to Christmas Eve. But, it's great because I married into a family that does it.
Okay.
But every Christmas Eve, it's seven fishes, you know, starting at 3 p.m. till, you know, it goes
That's
on
cool.
for like 5 hours. So you got it starts out with some shrimp, and then you got some flounder, and then you got bacala, which is, you know, in the sauce. And
yeah, I like it. I like
you have
it,
to
but
eat, you have to eat an odd number.
So What's
you,
that?
You can eat like five fish or three fish, but it has to be an odd number.
Oh.
Because my mother-in-law is very superstitious, which leads me to my next question. Do you have any superstitions?
No, I think...
Okay. Good answer. All right, Greg. Last thing we do on JoeyRitter.com is we do a segment called Turn It Up or Turn It Off. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, I got a fan question.
Smash or Trash?
Yeah, actually, that's a better name for it. But let me get to the fan question. I almost forgot this. I was conversing with a gal on Twitter and told her I was interviewing you, and she wants to know, what your favorite song to perform live is, but I'd like to try to guess if I could.
Sure. That's fun.
But your hint is, you got to give me the album it came from. Now, if it's Comet or Ghost on the Boardwalk, I'm in trouble because that's, you know, the generation of iPods. It's songs that come up on the shuffle, and I'm familiar with the songs, but titles are what slips me. But if it's before that time period, I'll get it.
Well, the thing is, I kind of have to stop you because these things change.
Sure.
So it's hard to even say, like, your favorite song now is not going to be your favorite song to play in a week.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, there's a handful that are have probably been on the top five throughout the over time. But, like, usually you have a new song, you just want to play it because it's new. Right. And suddenly that's your favorite song to play because it's fresh. But if you want to, we'll take a stab at it. If you want to, if you got something in mind that you think you want
to
guess,
well, you
got
to give me an album to go off of. There's just too many songs.
Yeah.
or you can even tell me the album, and I'll tell you the song on that album.
Okay. How I Spent My Summer Vacation.
Well, I always have to go with that song, or
yeah,
or
that's a good one.
True Believers. That's a good one.
Yeah. Those are really solid. Stable classics.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I know that question's impossible to answer. All right, so here's the last segment we got here. Turn it up, turn it off. Would you say smash or what?
Smash or trash. There was some radio show, like, in the 80s. Like, they would play a record. And you'd, okay, is it a smash or is it trash?
This is a total 80s segment here. Okay. All right, so it's only two options, though. Turn it down is not an option. You can only turn it up or turn it off.
Okay.
So your first song is REO Speedwagon, Take It on the Run. I don't play clips or anything. I don't have the money for that.
Probably Turn It Down.
Okay. No, that's not an option.
Take It on the Run, baby. Yeah, I wouldn't. Maybe. It depends on what kind of mood you're in.
Turn It Up or Turn It Off, not Turn It Down.
Oh, Turn It Up or Turn It Off. Probably Turn It Off.
Okay. Second song is Bob Marley, No Woman, No Cry.
Turn It Up. Every time.
Classic. Third song, Barbie Girl in a Barbie World.
Turn it down. Or turn it off.
All right. Yeah, you know, I'm okay with my manliness, and I'll admit that sometimes I'll turn that one up.
Sure.
All right, Young MC, Bust the Move.
Turn it up.
Got to turn it up. I can't anybody in their right mind would turn that down.
It's so good, yeah.
Last one is Toto, Africa.
Probably turn it off.
All right, I have to hear the explanation on that one.
Well, it's probably like, you know what? It's hard to say. I might turn it up sometimes.
Well, it might be. You know, sometimes it's a time period where the song hit you. So if it, you know,
exactly, and it's also a mood that you're in, like. I could hear that song in a certain time and place and be like, I do not want to hear this. And then another moment, I might turn it up.
Right.
But,
All right, so if you're in the car this afternoon, would you turn it up or turn it off?
I might have turned it up.
Okay. Acceptable. All right, Greg. Well, hey, I could not be happier that you were on the show. And, you know, I remember my first Bouncing Souls show. It was the tour that you guys did with NOFX and High Standard there at the Troc. And I remember after the show, you know, I just came up and, you know, I don't even know if I introduced myself. I think I just walked by and said hi because I was nervous. I was like 16 or 17. And you were outside just kicking a soccer ball behind the Troc. And you were really cool then, super cool now. I really appreciate you doing this.
Well, thanks for having me, and I appreciate it too.
All right, Greg. Good luck with everything.
Take care, Joe. See ya.